This is the Great Western Inland Sea Podcast, and I'm here with my guest, Vinny Eastwood, from the Vinny Eastwood Show. How are you, Vinny?
I don't know, because one of those days, I just sort of went on a week's holiday, and it turns out on this week's holiday that I have to appear on three different people's shows, yours being the first.
And, well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and also I have to cut together a number of documentaries, radio ads, and so on and so forth. So it's a working holiday, even if I'm not on live for this week.
You are a busy, busy man, and I definitely appreciate you doing this. How did you get into doing the Vinny Eastwood Show?
Mostly I was just sort of listening to InfoWars, Alex Jones, a lot, and kind of started to get really angry and aggressive and antisocial, as you kind of do. I didn't manage to fit in terribly well with my whole work environment. I really didn't like the people I was working with or the job that I was doing. I was a salesman, and I was really good at it too. I was making a shockingly large amount of money, but none of it mattered to me, because I just realized, look, I'm a freaking slave.
It's just money.
It's not that it was just money. It wasn't about that. It was more the fact that the people I was working with had no morals, no code of ethics, no honor, no truth. They were just scum, and they were beneath me. And it just turns out that that's basically almost every single job that I've been into. Everybody I've been working with has just been freaking beneath me. They don't really value being kind and generous and nice to people and doing what's right. They value getting paid at the end of the day. Whereas I valued doing what was right and valued caring about people, and I made more money than any of them. It was like they didn't want to. It was like there was something motivating them to get money that precluded them from being honest, decent people. It was just sickening to me, and it felt like I was in a toxic, poisonous environment, like a good apple in a bad barrel the whole time, and I just couldn't stand it. So I got myself a last paycheck. It's like $4,500 or whatever for the month's work, plus another $11,900 worth of mall shopping vouchers. Got myself a computer, got myself a camera, and just started attending protests and public meetings, filming it all, editing it, putting it up online, and that kind of thing. And a couple of years later, somebody gave me a spot as a co-host on a radio show. They liked me a hell of a lot better than the original host of the show, so they fired us both and gave it to me. And and this is kind of become my new reality, where I get appreciated for being the good, honest, decent, hard-working, generous person that I am, and don't get taken advantage of by ruthless, psychopathic criminal scum.
Well, I think that's with every job. There's kind of like this hierarchy of here you are, this little peon, and here they are above you, or they try to be above you. They try to make this out to be that you're way below them, and that's where you're going to stay.
Do they call you a peon because they're pissing on you?
Not technically, but they really are. I mean.
It's interesting how words are structured like that, eh?
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah. Like another one that's interesting like that is the European Union.
That's good. That's good. That's true, too. And they got a Nobel Peace Prize, by the way.
Yeah.
Deservedly so, right?
It's ironically that they call it the Nobel Peace Prize because they don't seem very noble to me, or at least the recipients of late, anyway.
Not at all.
I mean, what do you got? You got a dude who bombed six countries getting a Nobel Peace Prize.
makes perfect sense, right? Let's not forget about Kissinger.
Kissinger got a Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, he did. He did, yeah.
The military men are are to be used as sacrifices for the New World Order. They're just useless eaters. They are stupid animals, and we should just kill them in order to make what we want to the world.
Oh, my God, Kissinger, you're on to is a Peace Prize.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much. I've been working at this for quite some time, and there's an absolute need for a new world order and reward people who kiss the banker's ass and adopt their particular policies of scumbaggery. I'm very honored to receive this award. I don't like black people or women or things of that nature. I only like tyrants. Tyrants are my preferred motto, and that's why I hang around with George H.W. Bush and smoke cocaine with him, And we'll even do like a little trips out to Afghanistan so we can get some of that fresh heroin that we harvested straight off the fields in the CIA giant's $37 million airbase. Yeah, I'm Henry Kissinger, ladies and gentlemen, and you are listening to whatever the hell.
Exactly. It just baffles me that, like, he's not in prison. All these guys are running free.
I think it's because they own the prisons.
That's probably true, too. But, I mean, isn't there something we can do to you know, kind of push them toward... Maybe some kind of trick we can kind of just, you know, push them towards the trap door comes down. Oh, here you are. You're in prison now.
Well, here's a question. You've got to figure out if there's something I can do, right? Well, think about how many things are being done to you first. Ooh. Mm-hmm. That's quite a lot, actually, isn't it? I'm being taxed. I'm being poisoned. My water's contaminated. My air's contaminated. My food's contaminated. All the petrol companies and oil companies basically enslave me to their scumbaggery. So that means if you want to do something about it, you can do something about almost any of those things that are currently fracking you, as long as it's your passionate and what you really want to do in life. You know, let's say, for example, there's some people who are researchers into free energy, like Professor John Searle or whatever, the John Searle story. I was listening to a rebroadcast on my show the other day. And he's one person. He's developing a free energy device that goes against the current energy paradigm of alleged fossil fuels and so on and so forth, doesn't it? So he's doing his job. I figured out that the media is full of lies and manipulation, and they don't really care about any of the people that they're interviewing, no matter how bad things have happened to them, you know. And so I started up a radio show and a YouTube channel and stuff like that, and sure enough, I'm beating them on YouTube. I've actually got more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald TV, which is the second most subscribed YouTube news channel in New Zealand, and that's mainstream media. They're like the New York Times of New Zealand, and I'm beating them the frack out of them. Like,
that cracks me up.
Got nearly
Seriously.
Double what they got.
I think that's the shift, though. I think people are they know that they're being lied to by the mainstream media, and they want to seek out some new information, and you're offering it to them. So,
well, I'm not just offering information. I'm also offering. I mean, like a lot of people,
you're offering truth.
There's a lot of things that are on offer at the Vinnie Eastwood Show, I must tell you. truth, lies, sex, scandal, videotape. You know, the whole nine yards, the whole ball of wax, What I've found very fun about doing the show is that I can say pretty much anything on American Freedom Radio, apart from, you know, FCC-regulated words. So I've come up with, you know, pseudonyms for them. So instead of saying...
Like fracking.
Fracking. I say frack instead of the F word, like for frack's sake, or talk about the flux capacitor when I say for flux's sake. You know, and instead of saying the S word, you say Shiite Muslim, and so on and so forth. And, you know, like a whole Vinnieism dictionary down here of like swear words that aren't swear words, so that I can actually properly express myself. And ironically enough, instead of these swear words being offensive and describing how I feel, they're actually kind of comedic, and they turn something that should ordinarily be negative into something freaking hilarious. And I think that's actually the real reason why people should listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, is not necessarily because we've got great guests and great information, although it is those things. It's more the fact that you have fun while you're doing it, and you have a few laughs, and at this point in time, you look around and you think about how many laughs there are to be had, you know. And sure enough, if you're actually looking, like really, really looking deep into geopolitical issues, Fukushima or so on and so forth, ain't too many laughs to be had.
It's pretty dismal. Pretty dismal.
Yeah, and so you've got to falsely manufacture, at least some kind of comedy out of it. Otherwise, you're going to get sick from all the stress, aren't you?
It's true. And you do that. You're very charismatic, and you have kind of a comedic approach to it. Even though it's not, the material's not comedic, you make it, I wouldn't even say fun, but you make it approachable in the sense that you know, you're not going to get so upset. When Alex Jones is screaming at you, he's screaming at you. You're not screaming. You're just, you know, you're saying like it is, but you're not screaming. I think that's why Alex Jones gets such a bad rap. He's you know, he gets so irate.
Well, you know, I think initially you do need to get irate. That's why he's good. It's like when you go into school or whatever, you know. Alex Jones is like your primary school. He's like the truther that you listen to when you want to kind of know the real nasty kind of details of stuff that's going down. And he's great for that. He's got amazing documentaries and so on and so forth, where he's not screaming and yelling, and he's very calm, acceptable approach, incredible filmmaker. He's really done a number on the New World Order system by exposing it so exquisitely with a lot of his documentary film work, which I think people really underrate him for, and that's actually the real kind of balanced, cool, calm, working, methodical Alex Jones coming through in those works. And the radio show seems to be, he uses it much in the same way I do, I suspect, of just being able to vent, because... Mm-hmm. We're both very angry men, and I'm angry for a lot of reasons. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I've gone through in my life that still sort of irks me, and a lot of it's all my fault, and blame myself, and so on and so forth. So naturally, you become really, really angry all the time at yourself. And if you've got a sounding board, if you've got other people out there that are also angry about stuff that's going on, and you, instead of using that as a way to supercharge your rage, you use that as a way to compare notes, to sort of have empathy for other people's situations, and to really listen and actually show that you care. 'Cause I had a lot of people on the show who are just the stuff that's happened to them. You know, like having your house burned down or raided with 70 cops, guns pointed at your children's heads.
Couldn't even imagine.
I mean, it's just that kind of stress, that kind of pain, that sort of hurt. And then you see the way mainstream media interviews these people, as if they're trying to interrogate them, as if they're trying to, you know, get something on them or dirt on them. It's like, how dare you? You're just callous scum. Whereas
they're treated like victims, you know. Are they treated them like the perpetrators are the victims, and the victims are the perpetrators?
Yeah,
you know, that's the way they've always done it.
Yeah, and I don't stand for that kind of thing. I mean, I've put more New Zealand activists on air than any entity in the entirety of the world's frickin' history. I've done that by myself. Because I care a lot about the activists, because I understand that my job is meaningless without them doing their job. You're like, they're now, as far as I'm concerned, the closest thing to a reporter that the human race has left. They've done all the research, they've read through the government documents, they've exposed scumbaggery ad nauseum, and nobody will give them time on air to relay that very important, crucial information about what the government is doing and how the nation is being run. And they get reduced to a 4.5 second frickin' soundbite. You know how much information you can squeeze into 4.5 seconds?
4.5 seconds. That's just it, though. Do you think that the government? Well, obviously, this is not even this. But the reason that they want to crack down on the internet so badly is because all this information is leaking. It's not because of copyright issues or any of that nonsense. It's because they don't want this information getting out to people, because they want their secrets kept secret.
Yeah, but also at the same time, knowing these secrets, like, for example, a lot of people approach me and go, what do I do? What do I do? And it's like, do you know all the secrets? And it's just like, well, of course I don't. There's too many of them to know them all. And I say, well, mate, that's the reason why you're not doing anything right now, is because you're still confused. You don't actually know what's going on. I know what's going on only because I speak to people who know about different aspects of what's going on in one little sector, you know? Like, if you, let's say, I don't know, ballpark figure, there's 100 sectors of scumbaggery. government agencies, criminal organizations, particular individual mafioso kingpins of the government, and so on and so forth. Let's say, give or take, there's 100 issues. And I've interviewed 100 people for 2 hours a pop on each and every one of those issues, give or take, right? So I've developed something that each of those 100 people doesn't have: perspective.
Right.
When you over-specialize, you only know one thing about one thing. But when you generalize, like I do, you know a little bit about a lot of things. And so if there's ever a point where you want something done specifically, or you want a piece of information, or you want a piece of legislation to work for some particular reason, or you want to break down things that are going on that are being reported in the media, I'm at a very, very benefited position. That I've created basically to a large extent all by myself. You know, there's support from listeners. Occasionally people volunteer and produce, organise me guests every now and again. But ultimately I'm the one who's sitting down here editing the videos every day, uploading the archives every day, interviewing the guests themselves. And it's a lot of responsibility, because when you think about it, if you're talking to people who have had their lives threatened because of what they know, who are currently under surveillance, and these are the only people that you virtually now have time to hang out with to a large degree. You know, I hang out with listeners on occasion. You know, they'll message me on Facebook, invite me out for a drink or whatever, and I'm all too happy to accept because it's a stressful job. And I think Jack Blood told me one time, you know, there's two general rules to be a radio show host. One is drink. If I didn't drink, I would have gone crazy a long time ago. And secondly, is take the money. If people offer you money, they're not telling you to do anything bad, and they're simply giving you a monetary reward for the good work that you're doing. And they're not compromising you, and you're not compromising yourself by doing it. Just take the frickin' money. Just accept the generosity, because right. Otherwise, you're not going to have any kind of longevity, are you? And that's why a lot of big radio show hosts and what have you burn out, is because they're too afraid to ask for help, and they're too proud to accept it if it's offered.
That's true. Do you think, going back to Alex Jones for a minute, the reason that people don't take him seriously is because he's making so much money now?
I don't know. I haven't heard any words to that effect, that people aren't taking him seriously, because the vast majority of what he talks about happens to be true. It's the reason why he's gotten so popular in the first place. I mean, you can poke holes at this, that, or the other methodology, but on the whole, he's done probably more for the truth movement than any other single living person in history. He's certainly done a lot more than David Icke, a lot more than George Norrie, in order to revitalize and bring up the truth movement aspect, to take the fight directly to the cabal. I mean, think about the Bilderberg conferences and things like that.
Right.
A lot of the large reason why there are now crowds outside of Bilderberg conferences and people saying, we're not your scum, we're not your slaves, is because of Alex Jones making that film Endgame and really exposing it and then creating a movement around to stop it. And that's the real power that he has. And he uses his power sometimes in a way that isn't very nice to people. And I've talked to a lot of people behind the scenes who used to be, like, I've talked to his former producer, I've talked to his former stand-in radio host, I've talked to a lot of people who were basically there at the beginning of his career and halfway through it, and so on and so forth. And some of the stories that they tell me about things that he's done to them and to others is just really frickin' horrific. Like, it reeks of criminality Just real kind of megalomania, right?
And yeah.
And I spoke to George Norrie about this. And you ever listen to George Norrie, you don't see a touch of megalomania about him. He's very calm. He's very reserved. He's very receptive. He's very kind to people. He actually
seems rational.
He listens very intently to people, and he really cares. He's non-offensive. He doesn't get into fights with anybody. He doesn't yell. Doesn't scream. And I asked him, how do you do that? How do you get to the point of having 29, 39 million listeners a night and still remain really down to earth and not turn into some form of douchebag? And he says, you've got to talk to the people. All the time, everywhere I go, I'm always talking to the people. There's the average Joe on the street, the person who I'm sitting next to in a taxi or a bus or whatever. You always really just got to genuinely care and talk to everybody that you see. And that way it keeps you rooted, it keeps you down to earth. Because the thing that I think breeds an elitist mentality in people is when you say to yourself, oh, I don't have time for that kind of person, but that person's got such and such and blah, 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 massive freaking career, all big names and lights and so on and so forth that I really want to be seen associated with, so I'm going to go associate with them. Instead of talking to this average person on the street for 5 minutes while I'm on my way somewhere. And you don't realize that if you're like somebody's virtue hero or whatever, just giving them a hug or talking to them for 5 minutes can really kind of make their day and change the entire direction in their life. You know, you can do that. I mean, imagine people who met Bruce Lee or Muhammad Ali or something, and imagine being able to tell the story, I spoke to Muhammad Ali for 5 minutes or whatever. You say Alex right. Jones is like the Muhammad Ali of the truth movement to a degree. He does float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
He certainly does. He certainly does. And I think, you know, he gets a lot of – I think both sides are kind of after him because he's on one side, the mainstream wants to completely shut him down. And there's people in the truth movement themselves that have kind of like branched off and don't want anything to do with him. And there's always those little you know, sections of people that kind of bring down the original intent, I think.
Well, does anybody know how much work he's done into it? I mean, like, let's say it was all handed to him on a silver platter. I could understand people, you know, being really anti him and angry at him and so on and so forth, and jealous and so on and so forth. But, you know, when he's pulling 70, 80-hour weeks, doing 7 days of radio every week, been doing it for like 20 years, gotten all the calling up advertisers himself, phoning into other people's radio shows and calling in and making comments and getting people to do his, doing all this marketing, doing the copious quantities of research, writing all these articles and appearing on television shows from all around the world and flying around, bullhorning, protesting, filming, recording, you know, dude.
It's got to take a toll. It takes a toll somewhere. Yeah.
There's an old saying. Everybody ends up exactly where they deserve to be.
It's probably true.
And if he's in a position where he's got all that power, he's got all that audience, and he's also got a lot of flack, he deserves every bit of it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he might. He might.
So, I think it comes with the territory, and you got to accept that. I mean, I'm like a flea on the ass of an elephant by comparison to the T-Rex of talk radio. And yet I have people constantly calling me and referencing that I'm kind of like the Alex Jones of New Zealand and so on and so forth, and that's a really big honor. I remember a couple of years back when I was first starting up, a guy starts up his YouTube channel for all his just normal YouTuber, just watching videos and so on and so forth, and he's got like his big banner up the top of his channel that says there's three people you should be listening to: David Icke, Alex Jones, and Vinny Eastwood. And it's like, whoa,
that's pretty big company there.
And you know, to be honest, I think that I absolutely deserve that kind of mantle. You listen to the Alex Jones show, you listen to David Icke speak, and then you listen to the Vinny Eastwood show, and you could really kind of think to yourself, in terms of how much it makes you think, in terms of how informed you feel afterwards, in terms of its actual effect on your mind, your consciousness, your level of intelligence, your level of empathy for the other people around you in this world, there really is that kind of comparison to be drawn, because I'm very intuitive. I really care about people, and I think it's like if somebody actually cares, like we're not talking about just playing around here. If somebody actually cares enough to give up their entire life in order to see that people who have important information are being heard and being listened to and are being cared about, don't you think that's worth a listen?
It certainly is. The thing is about you and Alex Jones and even David Icke is the fact that you're not exactly doing this to become celebrities. You're doing this to inform people. But the subject matter you're touching on is not it's not happy. It's very depressing, like we talked about before. So the things you're talking about aren't, you know, if you do become a celebrity, it's like you get there in a very, like, you know what I mean? It's not like you're out there, you're not in movies, you're not writing for Time, People magazine. These are very hard subjects to speak about. Well, in a lot of ways,
it's not that hard for me because I guess I've been I've had a bit of a pain in the ass life, you know, and been used to people not listening to me. I've been used to being on the kind of the outsides, on the fringe, and having people judge me before they know me, or having people betray me, and so on and so forth. So I'm a perfect candidate to go into talk radio. Because talk radio is a nest of freaking thieving scumbaggery vipers and egotistical mindsets, and just some bad people in this industry, man. And on the mainstream side, they're freaking even worse, you know. And people make the mistake of when you go off topic. Hold on a second here. I want to just note this down. Okay, the psychos in radio, and the other thing I wanted to say there was about kind of how you deal with this, and the reason I'm doing the radio show actually has nothing to do with the information. Okay, I'll just come right out and say there. I'm not out to inform people. I'm not out to wake people up. That's not my intention. Not at all. You know, if people do get woken up or informed or something like that, that's all good. But that's a side effect. There's only three things that I'm supposed to do: make you laugh, and because when you're laughing, this information, this terrible freaking situation, regardless of what aspect you're talking about, no matter how traumatic it is, if you can turn it into a joke, it loses its power over you. You cut through that fear. You cut through that frustration. Biochemically, there's a lot of endorphins that get released into the bloodstream that relieve a lot of stress. Being a truth is very stressful. Okay? And
absolutely, it is.
There's some people who say that conspiracy theorists are only coming up with all of these conspiracy theories in order to make themselves feel better, in order to make themselves think that there's something that they know about the world.
How would that make you feel better?
Yeah. It makes us feel comfortable to know that there's somebody in control, is basically their thing. It goes back to like this, some frickin' bullshit, basically.
There's a giant foot stepping on all of us that makes us feel really great.
Yeah. And their logic just is non-existent. It's not there. It doesn't make any sense what they're saying. And that's because they can't make sense of what we're saying, because they don't think, right? That's what university teaches people. It doesn't teach you critical thinking. It teaches you how to be critical of people who can think.
That's right. But lately, I think maybe you've seen it too, is that I think the conspiratorial minds are coming around and more people are kind of grasping that.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many people are coming around, because they come around getting angry, depressed, getting isolated from their friends and their family, getting fired from their jobs, getting disillusioned with the entirety of their life that they've been working on for their entire existence and stuff like that. And there's nobody out there who's just like a full-on truther council session at large, you know, kind of thing. You go into a psychiatrist and you say, I'm really stressed out about the reptilians, bro. Oh, my God.
here's some drugs.
They're going to try to eat my children. They just play with drugs or whatever. So if anybody out there is feeling stressed, you're feeling unhappy, your friends aren't listening to you, they're calling you a crazy conspiracy theorist or something like that, or your family stop inviting you to Christmas dinner because they can't stand your political talk and so on and so forth, you go onto YouTube and you search Counseling for Truthers, Vinnie Eastwood. Counseling for Truthers, Vinnie Eastwood. And you watch that episode that I did, and I just sat there and to tell people all of these problems that you go through socially as a truther, and how to freaking deal with them, how to go about them properly. For example, you got a family that doesn't want to listen to you and doesn't want to listen to your conspiracy theories? Well, guess what? They don't have to, and you shouldn't be trying to force the truth on them. What happens when you try to force anything on anybody? They get really effed off, don't they?
They sure do.
How did the mainstream media and the apparatus brainwash your parents into, or your family members, or your brothers, sisters, or whatever? How did they get brainwashed into thinking that you're the crazy one? Very slowly, with little bits of information and little ideas injected every now and again. Okay? So, you've got to remember something. You got along with your family before you became a conspiracy theorist, right? Right? Didn't you? Well, what were you doing with them before you became a conspiracy theorist? Were you playing cards with them? Were you watching a movie with them? Were you doing gardening with them? Were you playing bridge? Were you having a few drinks with them? Were you making a meal or something like that? Go back to those very important roots and so on and so forth. The reasons why you got along with your family members at all in the first freaking place. And actually just show them that you're still the same person, even if you're now thinking differently. And after a while, they start to realize that you actually know what you're talking about, and then they start listening to you because you're still that familiar person and they still feel comfortable. They still feel like they know you and they still feel like they can trust you, all right? If they're the really aggressive kind, on the other hand, who won't accept anything, then you really can't talk about the conspiracy stuff to them around. But there's many, many things that people will be willing to accept in order to break into the conspiratorial world. There's, you know, have you ever heard the phrase, there's many paths to the truth? You know, there's no just one path. You know, we've got Satanists who turned away from Satanism and went into the truth movement. We've got hardcore Bible-bashing Christians who started to figure out about the Jesuits and the Vatican and so on and so forth and left their church and became a truth activist. We've got Christian pastors and so on and so forth who are now exposing child kidnapping and pedophilia within the church system and so on and so forth. It doesn't matter where you are or what you used to be doing, you will find a path to the truth. If you figure out what your parents or your family's ticks are, then you can talk to them about those particular subjects. Other ones will be outside of their paradigm and they just will get angry at the moment. You can mention it once and they won't be receptive. Don't mention it again. Okay? It's what I call the information grenade.
See how it works, yeah.
You pull the pin, you throw it, you throw the grenade into the room. And if it goes off, luckily you're out of the room by then. All right?
That's true.
It takes about 7 different people to tell you the same thing before it sinks in. Not you saying the same thing to them 7 times, but 7 different people saying the same thing to them. All you got to do is play your part. You say the one thing, then leave it. And you go back to playing your card game with them.
Do you think it works like a kind of incrementally, especially with me? When did you like discover all of this nonsense with the state and all of this, just this nonsense in general that we've been fed?
I think that was probably my first year at university when I got busted for selling weed.
That'll do it.
Yeah. You get caught with 13 grams of cannabis. And you might go to jail for up to 8 years. They treat it more seriously than manslaughter.
For a plant?
No, not even for a plant. Just a couple of pieces of tinfoil with some weed inside them that accumulated totally to 14 grams and could have gone to jail for up to 8 years, right? That's less than $200 if you bought it by the half ounce. I mean, you just think about that. Okay, how long would it take to incarcerate? How much would it cost? It costs about $90,000 a year, between $25,000 and $90,000, depending on whether or not you're minimum security or maximum security, in order to ingrain you for a $200 worth street value.
Jeez.
You know?
Yeah, that's worth it.
Yeah, but I was lucky. You know, I got away with 300 hours community service. The person in front of me was up for sexual assault, resisting arrest, and growing 5 cannabis plants. He got 150 hours community service.
Really?
The guy in front of him just got out of heroin rehab and stole a jar of Craig's raspberry jam from the local BP service station. And he was ordered to pay $4.32 in order to pay back BP for the jar of Craig's jam that he stole.
Well, he stole from BP. What do you expect? You know?
You just think about this. It cost him a couple of $100 to hire a lawyer to prosecute this person for the theft of a jar of jam.
You know, BP can do it.
What the hell is the point? And it's just like everything seemed like totally insane and totally corrupt. And the places where they hold these courts and everything like that, it's just bad vibes, man. Like I can feel vibes, man. And oh my God, they've got these stone buildings that have had countless, numerous people be sentenced to jail for years and years and years, and all that negativity just gets retained inside these things.
Inside the walls, yeah.
Yeah, and it can't get out, and there's always more suffering and more pain and more persecution and prosecution and punishment and slavery and scumbaggery coming through those doors every single frickin' day. And you walk into this place, and it's like, oh my God, it's like being stepped on. It's like you're a cockroach being stepped on. That's what it feels like inside these court buildings in New Zealand, man. Just bad people, bad vibes, bad experience, and bad results, legally speaking, every single step of the way. And when it hits you, and that's why a lot of people don't become activists or whatever, because they don't become a victim of the system. That's ultimately what kind of made me figure out that everything was fracked, that you can't trust police, that the court system's corrupt, that the laws are BS, that everything started to unravel in my mind. And it took me a good year, you know, working off that community service before I summed up the inspiration to go back to university. And when I did, I was just like, you know what? None of this is helping me. You're learning about vectors and frickin' cosine bloody shapes and economic formulas and business model proofing and so on and so forth and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, none of this knowledge is of any practical value or benefit whatsoever. Nothing of it really connotes any really powerful, resounding education or proper truth or enlightenment to it. What the hell is the point? And you do this where you do these essays, right? And they give you a number of different subjects you could possibly do the essay about. Student film and media studies, and they gave me the option of doing an anti-television discourse essay. All right, basically to diss television, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's what I'm."
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. And I had this idea in my head that television gave people tiny packets of information, you know, like 30-second news stories, and then on to the next one, and that they wouldn't be able to remember it or be able to decode the news properly, that it doesn't give them truth, it gives them propaganda, it doesn't give them information, it gives them misinformation, it doesn't give them a pleasant experience where they actually learn something at the end of it, it gives them a jarring kind of manipulative experience, where they gradually manage to form the ideas in your own mind for you. That was my idea. And then I started reading all the recommended source materials of anti-television discourse. And all of these authors for like 30, 40, 50 years ago were saying it'll compress people's intelligence levels, it'll mind control them, it'll start to help them to develop their thoughts for them and so on and so forth. Like almost everything that I was thinking independently had already been thought of by people who've been criticizing television since its inception.
You've been to America, haven't you?
No, but all our television shows are American. And and so I wrote this essay.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Most of them
anyway. American television is huge everywhere, but we get the cream of the crop. Like we get the best television shows because most of the American television shows that I've seen, like on the internet and so on and so forth, and when I was there for a short period of time when I was 14, was just terrible. So anyway, I write this essay, brilliant essay, you know, and like you can tell by how I speak that I'd write pretty good.
Absolutely.
And I showed this to my an English professor, a friend of mine, who's one of my best mates from school's father, and he said, "Mate, that's brilliant, that's awesome, hand it in." So I handed it in to my film and media studies tutor, and they gave me a D-.
What was their reasoning? Do they ever give you a reason?
No. So naturally, I had to invent one. They seemed very positive about television. They said that it gave people something to relate to each other about, and that it brought people closer together through a shared experience. And I completely disagreed. Because if you're friends with somebody, because they watch the same television show of you. That's not exactly the basis for a healthy relationship, is it? It's a very vacuous and benign and pathetic and insignificant connection in which to base an entirety of a human relationship, which actually is a necessity for your goings and comings and goings in the world, is it not? Your relationships with other people.
You know, I mean, take a look at, you know, sports fans, for instance, in America, crazy, crazy sports fans. You know, they go, "Oh, well, we're part of the same team. You know, we like the you know this team or that team." You know,
yeah.
No, that's your connection, huh? Okay, well, good for you.
Yeah. So basically, the idea is collectivism versus individualism. Because I wanted to think how I wanted to think and have relationships with people for real reasons, they gave me a D.
That's the way our education system works. If they don't believe what you, if you don't believe exactly what the way they think, well, that's you know.
John Lennon's mother told him once. She asked him, you know, what's the point of life? And she said, the point of life is to be happy. And so he goes, oh, okay, then. And he goes into school, and the teacher gives him an assignment on what you want to do for a career, what you want to do with your life. And he said, well, I want to be happy. And the teacher said, you don't understand the assignment. and young John Lennon says, well, you don't understand life. You know?
It's, yeah, I mean, we, people don't want to be happy. I mean, if you go through the system the way you're supposed to, I don't know if you will be happy.
Well,
you'll be.
The system teaches you to crave things that won't make you happy. Basically, this new phone will make you happy. These really nice shoes will make you happy. That hat will make you happy. That car will make you happy. That house with the gadgets on the outside and the security alarm, that will make you happy. These bars on your windows, that will make you happy. This car with impressive fuel economy and a DVD player for the kids in the background, so you don't have to pay any attention to your children on the road trip anymore. That will make you happy. And it's all a big freaking lie. Edward Bernays, who's the writer of the book in the corner of the term propaganda, used to work for the propaganda department during the First World War, and he came out, he used the suffragettes, he gave women cigarettes and got them to smoke them on these suffragette parades in order to get women to smoke, and it freaking worked. He got people to use hog fat that they called bacon. It's like the lowest quality cut of pork that you can get in your life, and he says, you can't have your eggs without bacon in the morning. This guy, he freaking coined bacon and eggs and so on and so forth in order to get rid of industrial pork waste product, you know? This is how the entirety of marketing and manipulation and the human need for happiness has been manipulated so that it benefits those who want to sell you crap, both verbal crap and physical crap, all day, every day. And make you believe that by consuming it, by purchasing it, by putting up with it, that it will make you happy. And unfortunately, it's a big freaking lie. So a lot of people will be walking around their life, and they've gotten used to deceiving themselves for so long that they don't realize just how freaking miserable they are. And then all of a sudden, their medication runs out, and they go off and they kill a few people and then suicide themselves.
That's the way existence. It's a very vacuous existence, you know, when you think that way. What is the answer? I mean, do you I know people are turning more towards the internet for information.
It's like I said, you know, look, you're being assaulted in many, many ways. You're being brainwashed in many ways. You're being physically attacked.
Psychological assault, right.
Psychological, psychotronic, manipulation. You've got misinformation. You've got poisons in your water, your food, in your air, and so on and so forth. You're being insulted. Basically, if you could conceive of any particular part of your body, internal and external, both physical and metaphysical, you're under complete and utter attack from all sides at all times of every single frickin' day. Believe it. That's a really depressing thought, isn't it?
A little bit.
Here's what's encouraging. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as you're resisting every single day one of the things that is enslaving you. And then you feel like, oh my God, I'm actually doing something against that which is effing me off. That makes me feel better about myself. That makes me feel like I'm accomplishing something. There, I'm being attacked in a million ways, but I'm fighting back in one way and winning.
Right. I think that by speaking about this, even by all the people starting all these podcasts and websites and all of this, it's a step in the right direction, I think, as a human consciousness, I think. Eventually, the people that are in control will, I wouldn't say step down, but realize that they might not have the stranglehold they had before.
Well, it's a confusing thing to think about, because what you're talking about is like winning or losing. You know, what do you define as winning? What do you find as losing? I define winning, like at the end of the day, winning, to maintain personal sovereignty. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Nobody can tell me what to do, and I can't tell anybody else what to do, and nobody can force anybody to do anything, right? That would be my ideal. That would be like winning for me. However, it's a long way off. So, what you do is, instead of thinking about your big win or your big loss, which is I live in slavery forever as opposed to live in freedom forever, you have to count your winnings, all right? You know when you're playing poker and you've got a big stack of chips, you know how good it feels to actually just count up. You know what? I only started with this much chips, but now I've got this much chips. Isn't that awesome? And I still haven't won the game yet, but I still feel pretty great about my position, don't I?
Cash out while you can.
No, you don't even have to cash out while you can. I say you go all in, mate. You go all in for the big win. And that's what people aren't really prepared to do in a lot of ways. They ain't prepared to sacrifice everything that they've got, because they think that everything they've got is theirs and it won't be taken away from them. That's not true. Everything you have, your own thoughts, your kids,
nothing is yours,
your home,
right?
Your car, your frickin' iPhone.
Your body.
Everything belongs to the government and the bankers at the moment. If you don't believe it, I've got some evidence to show you. Okay? There's no escaping the fact that you are a slave and you belong to somebody else. And they can, if they want to, just come and kill you at any point. So, can I ask you a question? Knowing that, now that I've told it to you, that you're a slave in every single way, do you want to keep going on with doing what you're doing? Or do you want to change something? Do you want to switch it up? Do you want to play a different game now? One where you make the rules, one where you've got the game rigged and they can't win, one where you are the house, where they're the one that's gambling you and all the one that's a safe bet?
Absolutely. You know, I think everyone wants to keep playing. They're just not, and you say, you know, that will make you happy, and people still search out this false happiness, you know? And everyone gets in that rut, you know, and I think we're in kind of a spiritual rut right now, where we do seek out these mundane activities that supposedly, you know, will generate happiness, but they never do.
Yeah, they don't generate happiness. They kind of usually produce some kind of penis, jammed right down your freaking throat. That's what's going on right now, and that really fracks me off is that everything's over sexualized. Everything's over convenienced. Like we just went down the shop to get something, you know, about an hour or so before coming on the show today, and my mate was like, "Oh my God, we're already here. That's convenient." And I go, "Yeah, most convenient stores are." And it occurred to me right then is that, look, not everything is as it appears to be, but some things are exactly as they appear to be. You know what I'm saying? and I think, you know, look, just realizing that everything's fracked or something like that, just believing that there's a whole bunch of ruthless criminals, psychopathic scumbaggery, child raping, Satanists, sacrificing, blood drinking, AIDS vaccine funding kind of bankster scumbaggery agents of the New World Order out there that control everything. Just because that's a fact doesn't mean you can't have a few laughs. I mean, you know, after all, it's just the end of the world.
Exactly. Have fun while the ship sinks.
Yeah, I mean, bro, you think about that movie Titanic and those dudes who were playing their instruments, you know, and playing the violins and stuff while the ship was sinking around them. Gentlemen,
yeah, shouldn't we be those guys?
Gentlemen, it's been an honor to play with you tonight. Good night. You know, that kind of thing. You know, we don't need to frack around and let the stress get to us, because look, when you're stressed, when you're afraid, that's when your thinking process starts to turn off. That's what people don't understand. If you're afraid, your ability to think turns off. It doesn't get limited, it goes off, as if it's not even there. And the way to alleviate this fear is to stop taking it so frickin' seriously. All right? Look, bro, you're going to be exterminated. So frickin' what?
Everyone is.
I ain't exterminated yet, am I?
And seriously, you think you're going to hang on to this body forever? You're not. You know, people are freaking out about, like, tomorrow. And the honest truth is, you might not even make it another second.
Yeah.
So you might as well just have a good time.
Why be afraid about tomorrow when you can be happy about today?
Exactly.
I mean, in my opinion, there's only one moment. It's this moment.
Right now. Exactly.
Yeah, all right. And that's a continuous moment. Even right now, it's still that one moment. And that moment is stretched on all throughout history. And it will stretch on all throughout eternity. So in a way, you get to share a moment with every person who has ever lived or whoever will. And that's an encouraging thought. You're not
Absolutely
alone.
It is. Absolutely it is. You know, there's that theory that there is no time, there's only right now. You know, the time is a manufactured, you know, concept where we're living in right now. You know, what happened a few seconds ago doesn't even really matter because there's only right now.
Yeah. And that's the thing that people don't get. Like, oh, but you're talking about the extermination of the human race and Agenda 21 being implemented and all these vaccines and the bioweapons being released and all of this kind of stuff. You're not talking about right now. You're talking about the future. No, actually, bro, all of that stuff is going on right now, actually. You know, I'm sorry to inform you, but this isn't something that I'm talking about that's happening in a far-flung future or galaxy. I know where it's headed, but the thing is, we can only stop it if we stop it right now, okay?
Right.
And what's more important in your life? All right, seriously, I mean, just think about this. Think about all the things that you got in your life. You know, you got your family, you got your home, you got your possessions, and you got your missus, and you got your extended family. You know, grandparents, grandchildren. Some people have got them. You know, and you think, okay, what's more important, their survival, or them being enslaved to criminal, rapist bankers for the rest of their existence, or exterminated? What's more important than preventing that? You know, and seriously, try and think. What's more important than preventing all the things that you love and cherish from being stolen and exterminated?
Well, there's nothing, but I think a lot of person would say their iPod, their iPhone. that's where we're living now. You know what I mean?
I got nothing.
You're done now. I've ended the Vinnie Eastwood show myself.
Yeah. So you see, that's the thing. That's the thing that people don't get is that a lot of life and the very important decisions actually boil down to very freaking simple equations like that. It's like, can I be friends with this person? I don't know. Ask him a question. Well, if you were paid money, would you ever put on a black uniform, have a submachine gun, and at the government's behest, come into my house and exterminate me and my family? And they go, no, I'd never do that. Okay, cool, bro, we can be friends then, because we don't really have any fundamental disagreements, do we?
No, I honestly don't even mean that. I was speaking in the voice of the average American.
But what is the average American? Have you met the average American? What's his name? You know.
Yep.
See, there's no such freaking thing.
Yeah, you're right about that. You're right.
And that's another thing. Like when the president comes up and speaks, and he always goes, "My fellow Americans." Who the fuck are these fellow Americans? Are they your fellow?
30 million of them.
Are they like part of your freaking Skull and Bones alumni or something like that? Oh, these are my fellows. These are my peers. These are my fellow Americans. You know, you're full of BS, Mr. President. You don't know what are your fellow Americans, and because you have no bonds of fellowship to them, you have no loyalty to the flag, the constitution, the people, or the freedom of the country. Okay? There's nothing in those words that rings true for me. Because there is no such thing as an average American. Just like there's no such thing as a forest. It's only trees. It's just an abstraction. It's something that you make up so that you can categorize everything and put it into a little box. And you're unfortunately, right. I found what happens is if you try to put everything else into a little box, what you've done really is you've actually boxed yourself in.